Peter Whiteman, Reel 3. You were just telling me about going up to a hill 355.
Yes, I was. And we obviously arrived at our machine gun position. And another thing that I do remember about it, we actually took over from the Americans. And one of the ploys, if I remember rightly, as well, was that any of the people on the sort of front positions were made to wear American equipment and helmets, etc., to I presume the idea was to try and fool the Chinese and the Koreans. The Americans were still in that position. And another thing that I particularly remember about the Americans was the enormous amount of equipment and materials that they had. And I remember some of the things that they left behind when they pulled down the line, like jeeps, weapons, and one particular store cupboard. We just pulled the sheet aside, and this was absolutely stacked to the brim with Hershey bars. And I never forgot it, and I thought, my goodness me, if we'd done anything like that, we'd have been court-martialed. And however, they had the resources and to leave a jeep and some weapons and equipment didn't mean anything to them.
This was on Hill 355?
Yes.
Could you make use of this equipment? Sure, could make
I presume it did get used. I remember the jeep being used. I don't know who by, because I was just a raw recruit out there. And the thing that I remember was to sort out our dugouts and our machine gun emplacements, and we had to dig an MSR, a main supply room, and we had to do this at night with very, very little light. And I remember vividly when we were digging this, I was using a pickaxe, and I put my pickaxe through a dead North Korean's ankle whilst we were digging this MSR to our gun emplacement. And obviously something like that sort of sticks in your memory, because it must have been the line, particular line where we were on at one time was occupied by the North Koreans.
He was in uniform? He was in uniform?
I don't remember too much of the details of what he looked like, because he'd obviously been there for some time, I think. Quite naturally, when it happened, it was quite a distressing thing to occur.
But he was a soldier rather than a civilian?
He was a soldier, yes.
Why was it necessary to dig a men's supply route if you were taking over from the Americans?
Yes. I would imagine we do things a lot more differently than the Americans do when they were in the line, and our section machine gun emplacement needed a good supply route, particularly for the ammunition and that sort of thing, and also for our people to get back and down the back of the hill, where other facilities were.
What did you think of these positions you took over?
They were fairly basic. I remember my machine gun emplacement and our bunker, which was just slightly off to the right, and Sergeant Denny's position in the middle, and then the left-hand Corporal Porter's gun emplacement on the left-hand side. And some of the things that I vividly remember is the shelling, and also their sort of anti-tank shells bouncing off the top of our emplacement. And unless we'd actually got a sort of direct hit just in front of where our gun was, feeling perfectly safe.
Which unit were you in? Which company?
Support company. Support company, and I was with Sergeant Denny's, Sergeant John Denny section.
And this was a group of Vickers machine gunners?
Yes, Ron Offutt support company.
How many were in the company?
I'm not quite sure of the numbers there. Some of my details on the actual time in the front line are a bit sketchy. My colleague, who belongs to the same Korean veterans group that I do, his name was Michael Griffin, and he was Ron Offutt, but he wasn't actually on the same hill that I was on. He was actually attached to the Welsh regiment on the left-hand side. And he wasn't Vickers either. He was he's American Browning.
Were you in a platoon?
Yes. Yes. Because we were support company, I think quite a lot of us got well and truly split up, and some were machine gunners and some were mortars. And really, of the people that I met in the Royal North Regiment, actually in Korea, were very few, and there were just my own section and Sergeant Denny and our platoon officer, and I can't remember his name either, but I remember one particular meeting with him, because during the summer there it gets very, very hot, and one night we were having a briefing for a night fire on a particular defensive fire situation. And whilst we were being briefed, I blacked out. And the next thing I remember, I was about 25 miles behind the line, and I was in an army hospital, and I was there for about a fortnight. And I I gather afterwards that it was all to do with my not having a spleen and my not being able to cope with the extreme temperatures. And the platoon officer, young platoon officer, came to visit me. And I remember him saying, Whiteman, you picked a good time to go into hospital. While you've been away, we've been shelled every day. And I said, oh, well, I'll try and hurry back then. And the other thing I particularly remember about the hospital was I had woke up one afternoon and at the bottom of my bed, Teddy Johnson was sitting on the bottom of the bed there and chatting away to me, and they were out there as part of one of the concert, insert concert tours. Getting back to being in the line, things that I remember is the Yankee rations, the C-7s, American cigarettes.
What are C-7s?
C-7 is a type of pack, and it's like a pack of rations that you get for the whole day, including your burner. And also in there are other sort of comfort things that you might need. Basically, we lived on American rations, and then from time to time we would get this supplemented by English rations.
How did the C-7 rations compare with English ones?
Well, they were pretty good, really. They were all in these tins, and you had quite a choice. And it could be. I think the Americans call it hash, but that's like our corned beef. Or it could be frankfurters and beans. And then you had coffee, and then tin fruit, things like that, rice in the cans. Quite a variety. And the cigarettes could be anything from Camel to Chesterfield to Lucky Strike. And at that particular time, I was smoking a pipe, and I used to save all my Yankee bags up and then do a deal with the Canadians on the other side and get their Canadian red tobacco and red can tobacco.
Which did you prefer, the English rations or the C-7?
I got quite used to both of them, really. But obviously, the English rations would be more to do with like sort of cabbage and potato and chicken and more like a main meal. But I mean, you could live quite comfortably on these American C-7.
Was there any alcohol?
The thing I remember about the alcohol was we were able to get that. I think probably when we perhaps went into rest or reserve, and you bought it with this army money called BAF. B-A-F-F. And it was just like Monopoly money, really. But it was, we used to get a small allowance of this now and again to buy sort of luxury things like, can't remember what the beer was, but it was quite nice. And I know in the summer months I used to put it into a metal container with water and in the dugout, and it used to keep beautifully cool.
What does BAF stand for?
British something forces, army forces, money anyhow, and it could be sort of 5 shillings, 2 and 6 pence, 10 shillings, I think, was one.
Was this part of the line that you went into an active place? Very active, this part of the line?
No, I can honestly, the hostilities weren't at an end, but they certainly were slowing down a bit, and most of the things that the Royal Norfolk Regiment were involved in was going out into no man's land and doing patrols, and we were very much involved with firing on set defensive lines, mainly at night through a blanket, which we used to have placed outside the machine gun emplacement. And I do remember that the North Koreans and the Chinese suffered some casualties while we were in the line, not necessarily from our machine gun fire, but also from the field artillery. And the Royal Norfolk Regiment were backed up absolutely marvellously with the field artillery. And I can vividly remember on occasions hearing the North Koreans or the Chinese screaming in the distance whilst we were firing or whilst the artillery was going in. The Royal Office suffered quite a few casualties during the time that they were in the front line.
What effect on you did this enemy screaming have?
Just enough to say that I can still vividly remember it. And it is another thing that I remember as well is that if they were laying on the forward positions of the barbed wire, in most cases they would make sure that they came back and before the dawn and took them away. Chinese didn't have to leave their, or the Koreans to leave their dead.
But when you say screaming, were they screaming in pain?
Pain. Whether they was fatality or just injury, wounding, I don't know. Because I never actually saw any of this in the daytime, but the only sort of daytime activities that I remember is the shelling that we used to get used to, and also the Americans with their napalm bombs. And with our rangefinder, we used to be keeping an eye on the North Koreans and the Chinese, and every now and again we'd see them their heads pop up, and from time to time the American Air Force used to strafe their positions with this napalm, and that is fixed in my memory, and I have to say that I didn't like that very much.
Why is it so fixed in your memory?
It's a dreadful way to get wounded or killed with this napalm.
Do you think they were hit by it?
I'm sure they were. Those days that was modern warfare anyhow, and the more terrible things that we use today. It stuck in my memory, and I saw these planes diving on these positions using this napalm, which is a fiery gel, isn't it?
How did you know they were using napalm?
Well, I could see them from our position.
So, did this screaming disturb you, or did you just take it as a matter of course?
It didn't disturb me, but I have to say that I didn't. It's something I haven't forgotten.
Why was a blanket put up to fire throw?
Well, because of the nature of the weapon, the Vickers machine gun spits out a fire, and it doesn't take very long before they can pinpoint your position. So we used to fire, and we just have to renew that blanket quite often as well.
So it was a disguise. So it didn't deflect the bullets in any way?
No, it's just an ordinary army blanket, and it just the Vickers machine gun can fire at 500 rounds per minute, and it doesn't take long before it's got quite a hole in it anyhow, and just went straight through it. We were firing on direct fire lines with our dial sights anyhow, so.
What job did you have on the Vickers?
I did both the firing and also the number two, loading loading the machine gun, and we used to alternate. And I seem to be. Get my fair share of using it anyhow.
Which job did you prefer?
The actual firing.
Why was that?
It's more to concentrate on, and you had to be in control of the weapon that you were firing.
Who was in your gun team?
Yes, we had. A section, Sergeant Denny, and myself, Corporal Porter, and another guy, and I just can't seem to remember their names, don't seem to come back to me. The only thing that sort of I think about is that we were fairly busy all the time, but we were a pretty happy crowd. I used to do quite a bit of wireless procedure work as well. I used to get quite a bit of duty on the wireless in contact with the platoon
fire section. How did you know in which direction to direct the fire?
Well, that had already been worked out on our dial site, and all the firing that we did was would be worked out. We knew that a patrol was going out at such and such a time at night, and they would be going, and we were told that we would need to be firing at say 2200 hours on a set. And before we actually did that firing, we would have already set our gun so that it would be fired directly on that line.
So you just fired according to the clock?
To the readings on the dial sign. That's already worked out beforehand.
But the dial sight gave you the direction?
Yes.
And the clock gave you when to fire?
Yeah.
So...
It could possibly be, although we got these readings for that particular shoot that night, and then the next night we'd possibly have to alter the position of the gun again. Because they would be going in a different direction.
Was there any chance of hitting your own men?
Very, very, very remote. Most of the most of the statistical work was done with very much safety in to the fore.
Was there any tracer used?
Yes, we used tracer now and again.
Why did you do that?
Not quite sure why that was. It wasn't used very often, but it may well have been that way up above my level, I was just, somebody had said, well, you know, we need to pinpoint that particular area or something like that. I was very much just doing as I was told to do, as a machine gunner.
Did you get any incoming fire onto the machine gun position?
Yes. I remember particularly, it wasn't a night time, but it was early hours of the morning. After stand two in the morning, and some of the infantry on the forward slope of our position got a direct hit on the toilet and the latrine area. I never forgot that at all.
Who were casualties, do you remember?
There were several casualties. I can't remember who they were.
Did you visit the scene of the casualties?
I didn't. I did afterwards. But they're not. We were very much undercover in our gun positions.
So you didn't go to give first aid?
No, that was already being attended to by the infantry to the left and to the front of us there.
Any incidents you remember that happened in the front line?
Whether I sort of vividly